Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Kenny Kramer is the model for Cosmo Kramer, the unpredictable and an affable bachelor who has trouble staying on his feet. Prior to serving as Cosmo's model, Kenny had a long career as a stand-up comedian and was the manager of a British reggae band. During the disco years, Kenny created an electronic jewelry item that sold so well that Kramer was able to live comfortably long after disco died. For 6 years, Larry David lived across the hall from Kenny. One day, Jerry Seinfeld asked Larry for help creating a TV show. Jerry became famous, Larry became George, and Kramer became Kramer. For the past 17 years, Kenny has been the host of Kramer's reality tour and Kramer's reality roadshow. Here, Kenny relies on his stand-up experience to entertain people from all over the world with the behind-the-scenes Seinfeld story. In New York, the tour has a bus portion that goes to sites made famous on the show. Seinfeld even did an episode spoofing Kenny's tour when Cosmo Kramer started the Peterman's reality tour in the Muffin Tops episode. In 2001, Kenny was the Libertarian Party's candidate for mayor of New York City. The last time Kenny ran for mayor, he admits it was a publicity stunt, but this time he said he was in it to win. His campaign slogan reflected that Kramer for mayor, this time I'm not kidding. Unfortunately, Kenny lost. He did, however, receive thousands of votes and was relieved in that he was once again able to escape having to hold an actual job. The Seinfeld Show, which airs nightly in 90 countries, continues to be one of the world's most popular sitcoms. As there are no new episodes being produced, Kenny's tours and stage shows provide Sein fans with the only new Seinfeld experience available. Even though the show has ended, Kenny has made it clear that he has no such intention. Kenny Kramer will continue to entertain and live his life. It's worked so far. Please welcome the one and only reality Kramer, Kenny Kramer of Interviewing the Legends. Hey, Kenny, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Wow, what an introduction. Wow, I didn't know I did all those things.
I had to cut it down, too. How much of Michael Richards' character do you see in yourself? I know Michael did a lot of it on his own and didn't really want to collaborate with you, but how much do you see? I know all the little things that Larry David put in there is based on you.
Right. Well, you know, Larry knows me like a book, and he lived across the hall from me for many years. And, you know, so a lot of the Kramer personality, the golf, the entrepreneurism, a lot of time in the hot tubs, sex without dating, all of these things are going to be attributed to my personality. But, you know, Michael put his own spin on the thing when he found out he was going to be playing Kenny Kramer, or not Kenny Kramer, but Kramer, because the agreement I made with them is they couldn't call the character Kenny Kramer. But Kramer, he knew that it was based on Larry's friend Kenny and chose to do no research, didn't want to know anything about me. He wanted to completely model a character in his own image. And so he did, thankfully, because let's face it, if I would have been Kramer, this show could have gone right down the tube. Well, think about it, because I seizures, and you know, and that physical comedy is the ingredient that Michael brought to the part, which really made the show accessible to young kids that don't know that, you know, some of the jokes are a little too sophisticated for them, but when he comes in and says, "I'm out," it's funny.
Yeah, I've seen every episode probably about 100 times, and me and my daughter do all the Seinfeldisms. You know, like the parking. You know, I hate to give it up every time we get a good parking and things like that. So you know, we're huge fans. So I can really talk about any episode. And a lot of people don't know this. You were in the face painter.
I have a brief cameo there. Yes. When the first time that Elaine is dating Putty, and he paints his face to support the New Jersey Devils hockey team, there's a crowd shot, and I'm standing there with Michael jumping up and down. I'm wearing a Rangers shirt with short hair, clean shaven, and if anyone wants to see it, you know, just set your video recorder and go back frame by frame. You can't miss me.
Yeah, I saw it. And that's one of my favorite episodes, by the way.
Yeah, it's a funny episode.
It's a great episode. You know, I've interviewed two guys that were actually rock stars that appeared in Seinfeld.
Really?
Yes. Joe Lalla, who is also a friend of mine, Joe was in that face painter episode. He was the priest at the end that let Elaine in to see the priest that was in bed.
Really?
Yeah. Joe was in Manassas, the band Manassas. He was played with the Bee Gees. He toured with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And he was also an actor. And he's a good guy. He's from Tampa. He passed not too long ago. The other guy I interviewed, Michael DeBar, he was playing in the episode The Smelly Car. He was the restaurateur.
And, was he an actor, like a SAG actor that got the job through the regular channels? Or
yes.
Just know somebody?
No, he was a rock star. He played with Silverhead Detective, solo work, but he was also, he does reoccurring roles on Murdoch. He's Murdoch on the MacGyver show. He's the bad guy, Murdoch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Quite a claim to fame.
Yeah, a little trivia. Two rock stars that were actually in Seinfeld.
So you really know your Seinfeld stuff, huh?
I do. I really
do.
Well,
can you tell me, out of curiosity, what are your five favorite episodes? Can you do that?
Well, the face painter is one of them.
Okay.
The other one is probably Master of My Domain, definitely.
The contest.
I did like the when Kramer was a ball, he became a ball boy.
And then, right, at the U.S. Open, right?
U.S. Open. And I do like it when he had his will redone. And he pulled the plug and he freaked out at the end. Remember, he decided not to, end it anything happened to him. That was another good one.
You know, it's hard to make a top five list, but the ones you selected are very tasty.
They're very tasty.
I personally think the contest is the one that belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Definitely.
Because, you know, having a show where the storyline is the four main characters on NBC at 9 p.m. prime time make a bet who could go the longest without treating their body as amusement park. And it was just amazing what a breakthrough in the annals of television history. Because think about it, like maybe like 10 or 15 years before that episode, Rob and Laura Petrie couldn't sleep in the same bed.
Yep, exactly right.
You saw their bedroom, they had twin beds.
I know.
And now you've got the cast masturbating, or not masturbating. Very cool.
And Kramer was the first one out. That was so funny.
When he begs Jerry not to tell him to stop, you know.
I can identify with that, because if I saw a naked lady, too, I'd probably be the first one out. I'd excuse myself.
I like the roommate switch. The roommate switch.
Oh, the roommate switch.
Where, you know, this girl Jerry's dating is okay, but her roommate laughs at everything he says, is much prettier, and so they want to do the roommate switch. It's impossible. It's never been done. He and George work tirelessly on it. They come up with the plan. We're going to ask her to do a menage a trois.
Right.
And she'll be so repulsed and turned off that she'll break up with Jerry, and the other one might be intrigued. But Jerry comes in, and he said, "I spoke to her about it." And she said, "Yeah, it's on."
I'm into it.
I'm not going to do an orgy. I'm not an orgy guy. I'd have to get thick carpets. I'd have to wear orgy clothing. I thought that was really poignant.
The series was incredible. The writing was wonderful. And Larry David's, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm, I watch that religiously as well, you know?
Well, I think it's on Sunday night is the first episode of the 10th season.
The 10th season. He needs to put you in that show somehow.
It just hasn't worked out. He was filming in New York, I was living in Mexico.
Wow.
I was in Florida, he was like in L.A., and I wouldn't ask, and he hasn't asked either, so...
Yeah.
But as a fan, I think the show is great. He used to tell me, you know, what his stories were.
Right.
But I told him to stop doing that because I'd like to be surprised along with everybody else.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
Because some of those premises, you know, he could ruin the whole show for me by telling me that he's picking up a hitchhiker to get in the HOV lane. A hooker. A big, fat hooker to get in that lane. I think some of his things are Palestinian chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he's making love to this Palestinian anti-Semitic woman who says, "Do it to me, Larry. Do to me what you're doing to my people." You know, some of those stories are just amazing.
How about the yarmulke? You know, when
when funk.
Yeah, it's on the. So what? You dropped your yarmulke. So what? You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah, Palestinian chicken is a classic.
The Palestinian chicken, yeah. But the best was the, what do you call it? Fakwa?
Yeah.
The Ayatollah?
Yeah. And the Ayatollah, he okays it, but he wants Lee to go to, what's his name? Hamilton.
Yeah. And it's a great cast. It's just a bunch of guys you never think about, really, you know?
Yeah. They're very tight, you know. His core people that really he depends on is four guys that were on the writing staff of Seinfeld.
Right.
And, you know, anybody who ever worked at Seinfeld, even if you were just there for one season, it would get you a development deal, you know?
Yeah.
It's just amazing that how many guys came out of that with such great careers. Thing like Larry Charles,
mm-hmm.
who has that show Ballers.
Right, right.
The football players.
Yeah.
And directed Sasha Cohn in three of his movies. And it's just amazing how they were all over the place. But, Larry, like, he took off. I guess it was 2 years between between season 9 and season 10.
Right.
But, you know, coordinating all those people with their schedules and everything so that when they could get to work and, you know, have like a month or two that they could be filming. Because they film extensively. Like, when they do Curb, Larry told me they shoot like, you know, maybe 15 hours of video.
Really?
A lot of it are redos because they're just cracking each other up laughing so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole process is about the editing.
Yeah.
And it's quite an arduous task the way he has it set up. But, you know, it's his baby, and let's face it, Larry doesn't have to do anything ever again.
Yeah, he has fun with it. You can tell.
Yeah, no, he loves it because he's surrounded by his friends.
Yep.
You know, they're all very close.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of laughs, and it's a pleasure to go to work in the morning.
It's so funny, the characters you see, and they're like Ted Danza.
Right.
You know, in a different light. You see Ted in a different light, you know, which is, and you know, everybody's mad at Larry, and then the people that are mad at Larry are idiots, you know, because they shouldn't get so mad. You know, it's so funny.
What about his relationship with Michael J. Fox?
Yeah, I know. It's Parkinson's.
And that character Leon emerged.
Oh, God.
Spoiled for him.
Yeah. That's really a stretch there, but it worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leon, that's great. You did a lot of stand-up, and you also performed opening up rock concerts, didn't you?
Yep, I did. That was me.
What are some of the...
With a microphone and a pin spot, making people laugh for like 30, 40 minutes while
right.
they change the set over for the next act.
What are some of the shows you did?
Known as the middle.
What are some of the concerts you did?
Oh, I toured her for a while with Three Dog Night,
oh, cool.
Jenny Giles Band,
right.
Mike and Tina Turner,
wow.
Jose Feliciano, yes, Rare Earth, Black Oyster Cult, a whole myriad of them. It was a fun time, you know. I was living a really decadent lifestyle, playing mm-hmm. the part of a rock star.
Right.
And then I got custody of my 5-year-old daughter because right. my ex-wife was a drunk and she couldn't handle it. And now all of a sudden I could no longer be on the road living in hotels every night.
Right.
I had to have a home for her. So it kind of curtails my rock comedy experience. But I had a great run there for about 5 years.
That's kind of a love story in itself, you and your daughter. I saw some of the footage of you and her, and you guys had a great relationship.
Oh, yeah, I'm so lucky, you know, because having kids is a real crapshoot, you know.
Right.
I know people that are the nicest, most loving people in the world that have total asshole kids.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a crapshoot. But fortunately, my daughter was like, if I would have called Central Casting, okay, I need single dad has a daughter. Let me see who you got. They would have sent Melanie over. she was beautiful, outgoing.
Yeah.
Friendly, funny, you know, she's just really a gem and fun mm-hmm. to be around, and we just had such a great relationship, because, you know, one of the things I wanted to do with having sole custody of my daughter is I wanted to be the parent that I never had, you
right,
know,
right.
Like I used to do things like, Melanie, get up, do you want to go to school today, or would you rather go to the Bahamas?
Well, gee, Dad, let me think about that.
I used to love doing things like that.
That's incredible.
I got in trouble once. I wrote a note to, please excuse Melanie for scoop up school yesterday. She had to go to the Yankee parade on Broadway.
How cool is that?
That's not a good excuse that she had to go to a parade.
Yeah.
No, the Yankees won the World Series. Are you kidding? Where's your civic pride?
You know, that happened to me. My uncle took me out of school to see the World Series in 1970. I was a big Orioles fan.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the Orioles and the Reds back in 70. So, yeah, I know the feeling.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I was really lucky. And she's turned out to be quite a woman. She was making a lot of money, like 100 plus a year working for Lancome, big cosmetics company. But she always had a passion for children.
Right.
So she quit her job at Lancome.
Uh-huh.
And she became my assistant.
Oh, cool.
Went back to school and got a master's degree in child education.
Right.
And she's, you know, she took a job at the Board of Ed making like a third of the salary she had.
Right.
In cosmetics. But she has a passion for it. And now she's a first grade teacher in
awesome.
Boca Raton.
Awesome.
And she has two lovely grandchildren. They're 13 years old. They're twins. Two girls. And she really turned out fabulous, you know. She's a really gifted teacher. She's very informed and intelligent, and I couldn't be prouder of her, you know.
Yeah, my daughter and...
Thank goodness for FaceTime, you know.
Exactly. My daughter and son-in-law are both teachers, so yeah, we got a lot of teachers in the family. Where does she live? Does she live
Boca.
In Florida?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it ain't a bad place for me to go visit.
Not at all. Not at all. The weather's beautiful right now.
I know. It's in the 80s every day.
Exactly.
I lived in South Florida. You know, I lived when I was in my heavy rock days. I was living in Coconut Grove, Florida,
mm-hmm.
before it became this, like, you know, mega supermarket. It was really a little artsy-fartsy community with
right.
fine dining and galleries and that kind of a thing. And so I really liked South Florida. You know, people say, how could you stand it? I like humidity, man.
Yeah.
It puts a nice curl in my hair.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought you were kind of a rock guy, you know? And you look like a rock star.
Well, I did. I had a big afro and you know, a skinny guy with a big afro
yeah.
and a good sense of humor. So it worked, you know. You know, what happened was, you know, and I started out doing stand-up. I got a job. A friend of mine had a job as a driver, you know, for a comedian named Jay Jason, who's a very popular Catskill Mountain comic
right.
who worked, you know, two shows a night, six nights a week. And my friend got a DWI and couldn't be his driver anymore and asked if I wanted the job. Excuse me. So I took over and I became Jay Jason's valet driver or whatever. I, you know, he, my my mother lived like about 2 miles from where he lived, so he would come to my house, pick me up, and I'd drive the car and take him up to, you know, a couple of hotels that he had gigs at. And while I'm doing this, I'm writing jokes, and I'm giving him these jokes, and I'm watching these jokes, like, get laughs, you know? I go, wait a minute, I'm turning out some good material here. I could be doing jokes myself,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so I had always wanted to be a comedian, but now I had a great opportunity because Jay was very nurturing, and he mentored me to what to do. And so I got an act. My first act was very pedestrian, you know? I went to work like I went down to Miami where there was like a lot of gigs, club dates.
Right.
And when I got there, I was like the second young comic in Miami. Like, you know, Miami at the time was like, you know, it was like a waiting room for heaven. All these elderly people. And so I did an act that was fashioned to entertain, like, you know, regular normal audiences of people like in their 50s and 60s. And I was like 28 years old at the time. And so, you know, and also sometimes these acts can be brutal. You know, I mean, you know, you could be on stage and a couple old ladies in the front would be looking, shaking their head. He's too young. He's too young. So, anyway, and sometimes, you know, those old people could really be rude. I mean, when they didn't like you, they would just get up and walk.
Is right?
In the middle of your show, they would just get up and walk.
Oh,
I never forget one time I emptied a room in 10 minutes. I could have done it in the 6, but they were really elderly, you know, until they got up and adjusted their walkers. It took them 6 times to get out. So anyway, I realized right then that if I continue on this path entertaining these audiences, by the time my career is peaking, like in my 40s, I'm 27, you know, 40s or 50s, this audience is dead. They're going to be gone. So I decided I better start doing material to entertain my peers, and I turned my act into like dope sex and rock and roll.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I had a big hunk about Quaaludes and pot smoking and how to roll a joint and had all this stuff, and then kidding around about different bands I worked with and what their problems were.
Yeah, that's great.
And it worked, you know, and so I was able, and then I got lucked out and found an agent that loved me and that was responsible for Rod Stewart and Faces at the time. And, you know, he had the kind of power that, like, he also had Blue Oyster Cult and a couple of other agencies, a couple of other major stars that he controlled. And promoters, like, came to him and begging that they wanted, like, a particular act was going on a tour and it was routing through their territory and they wanted to have it. And so they would beg Wally, you know, oh, man, get me a date with Blue Oyster Cult, man. I'll take, and any date that Wally sold them was a guaranteed sellout. They were going to make money.
Sure.
So, like, usually, you know, as a comic, you go out on a gig and then you hope that the agent will get a good report from the buyer, you know, that, he did really well. But it was a situation where these promoters would be kissing my ass. Can't tell Wally we took care of you, right? Okay?
Yeah,
they,
right.
I wasn't worried. They were more worried about what I would say about them than what they would say about me. So, and it was great for a while, you know. It was a very decadent lifestyle, needless to say. It was the height of the rock and roll craziness, you know, the 60s, well, the early 70s. And it was going great, but then when Melanie came into my life on a full-time basis, you know, like I couldn't take her on the road and do that, so I ended up moving to New York, and here I've been ever since.
You were very popular with that electronic disco jewelry, right?
Oh, yeah. That was great. I found an item that it cost 10 cents and sold for $10.
Wow. What a markup.
So a few, I thought, somebody told me it was like a 10,000% markup.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But if, you know, you have that kind of a markup on a product, you buy it for a dime and you sell it for $10, and you sell a few hundred thousand of them, you're making money, you know. I used to, the product used to get manufactured and bagged in these little Ziploc jewelry bags.
Right.
And I used to, like, go to the Ziploc distributor and buy, like, you know, 20,000 bags at a time. And the guy swore I was a pot dealer. He says, go on, man, I know what you're doing with these bags. Come on, what do you got for me? I says, no, man, I'm selling jewelry, you know. So it worked out really well. But then, you know, after 2 years of this, you know, I went to try and patent it,
right.
And I couldn't do that because I was really using other people's technology. It was a battery and an LED and a little case. So I went to these patent people, and they said to me, listen, you're not General Motors. You can't enforce a patent, even if you got one.
Right.
He said, so just make your product and sell them while you can, because you're going to get knocked off. And sure enough, you know, where I had, like, disabled veterans making this stuff for me.
Oh, wow.
You know, people started tooling up and, you know, just really mass manufacturing the item and variations of the item. And, you know, and so I retired. And I was happily retired until my buddy across the hall, Larry, wrote this television show with Jerry. And the next thing I know, there's a character based on me that's an international icon.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I think if I don't cash in on this, I'm a complete idiot.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, did they have to? I guess they had to pay you for using your name or anything. Or
yeah, but at the time it was like, you know, nobody knew this would even get past the pilot.
Right.
You know, no, I had no leverage to insist on any big money or anything. But it worked out okay. And I got to say, I really owe a great deal of gratitude to Jerry Seinfeld.
Really?
I mean, okay, Larry created the product and was definitely the brains behind the operation, but it was Jerry. When they were putting this together, Larry wanted to call the character Kessler.
Right, right.
You know, and Jerry insisted, no, it can't be Kessler. It has to be Kramer. Kramer's a funny name. It's a beautiful name. It's mm-hmm. magical. So Larry acquiesced and let Jerry have his way. And so the character was named Kramer, not Kessler. And as far as I'm concerned, what a break that was for me. Because can you visualize this? Please now welcome Kenny Kramer, the real Kessler.
Kessler.
Wouldn't have worked quite
that,
as well.
That wouldn't have worked out too well, no. You know, I used to watch Michael Richards before Seinfeld. You know?
Fridays.
Did you remember the series?
No, I remember it, of course. Larry gave up his apartment in the building to get on the show. That's how he happened to move back to New York across the hall from me.
You remember him doing the army men and cutting off their heads and setting them up on fires?
Right, yes, for the big mound of dirt he had brought in.
That was so funny. And you know,
well, your listeners, if they hear us talking about this, if you just go to YouTube and put in Fridays,
it's great.
Funny stuff up there.
That was a great show. And you know, on weekends, what we did, of course, you know, you would get high and watch that, then you watch Saturday Night Live. That was our routine, you know, every weekend, you know?
Right. Well, it was a lot edgier than Saturday Night Live,
yes.
That's for sure.
Yep. They had
and also, they had a lot of bands that they broke them in.
They
in
did.
Like The Clash, their first television
right.
was on Fridays, and who were the guys that wore flower pots on their head?
Devo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they were, like, a lot of bands, like, Fridays was their first American exposure. They were really picking out some unique acts.
So, talk to me about the Kramer's Reality Tour.
Kramer's Reality Tour, my fun-filled romp of what's fabulously famous, what's real, what's stories. It's, there are several elements to it. First
right.
of all, it starts off in a theater, a 60-seat theater,
okay.
where I generally have every seat filled. And I do an hour of stand-up telling stories behind the stories about how there was a real this or a real that and what this was based on. And then we sell merch. I have most popular items are Ass Man license plates and Mandalay Industry bumper stickers.
That's awesome.
Master of My Domain t-shirts and
oh,
so on.
Gosh.
And then we board a bus and we go for soup. And you know where we're going.
Yep.
Right to the guy.
Soup Nazi.
Well, he's not there anymore. It's, he's Tal Yagin of the original soup chef. Turned it into a franchise. And you might see it's called Original Soup Man Soup.
Really?
And they have kiosks at airports all over the place. And
huh.
But the store on 55th Street is the original place that inspired the episode. That came about because Spike Feuerstein, who wrote that episode, The Soup Nazi, used to work for Letterman. And Letterman taped around the corner from the soup shop, and you know, the soup is unbelievably delicious.
It is.
And the Letterman writers used to go there, you know, for lunch and get takeout, takeaway soup. And, you know, because he ran the place like such a tyrant, like if you asked him two questions or three questions, he would just wave you over and say, next, and wouldn't sell you soup. You know? So that's how they nicknamed him him the soup Nazi. And, you know, when Seinfeld was in production, Larry would have these story conferences where writers would pitch ideas for stories, and Spike pitched the idea about this eccentric guy who has a soup shop on 55th Street. And Larry said, let's do it. And so naturally they do it, and they air it, and when they air it, it has that disclaimer that all characters and events are fictitious, and any resemblance right. characters living or dead is purely coincidental. Well, anyone ever had soup there and saw that episode of Seinfeld said, no way this could be a coincidence. You know? You couldn't have two eccentric soup chefs like this on the planet. Word got out there really is a soup Nazi. And the lines would be like over 100 people in line for 40 minutes waiting for him to scowl at you while you fork right. over or you... That's $15 for the lobster bisque. But the soup that he sells there now is exactly the same soup. He has really? A lot of integrity in the product. And so just about everybody on my bus orders a soup, you know, and then I do a photo op with people with the soup kitchen so right. that I pose with them with the soup sign in the background. And then a bunch of more funny stories, and we end up at Tom's restaurant, which right. on the show, of course, is Monk's. And we do a quick photo op in front of the restaurant. And then 3 hours later, we drop them all back at the theater, and they all had a great time. And if any of you listeners are interested, actually, yes. this Saturday is my last tour until the spring. I'm taking off the winter because okay. I have a reputation, you know. If right. I did it all winter, it'd be like I have a job.
Yeah, you've done pretty good for not having a job, huh?
Yeah, I tell you, I love it. You know, my philosophy, hard work probably won't kill you, but why take a chance?
Why take a chance? I could see you would be good friends with Frank Zappa for some reason.
Yeah, I love Frank Zappa. Yeah. What a guy.
What a man. Great mentality.
Actually, I was just watching his testimony before the House committee, and he was really quite articulate and well-informed. He was really a trailblazer.
On the censorship
but
stuff,
so the tour is a lot of fun. This Saturday's the last one. I'll come back. I think the date I selected is March 11th, which is the weekend before spring break.
Right.
And you know, and the amazing thing about the tour is about the show in general is that the show's audience is so cross-cultural and cross-generational.
Yep.
Like, so many times, like, you know, there's a whole world of kids, like, 8, 10, 12 years old, discovering Seinfeld
awesome.
For the first
awesome.
Time.
Awesome, yeah.
And it's playing, like, in many cities, it plays 4 times a night, you know, 2 on Super Cable and
right.
2 on the local Fox station. And so I find now that I have coming... Well, when I do the stage shows, it's the same thing. People will come, they'll bring their parents and their kids. 3 generations.
That's great. Right.
Grandma,
that's right.
grandpa can enjoy the show along with their grandchildren. And it's just great to see, you know.
I love that because, you know, I interview a lot of rock stars. I mean, over 1,000, you know. And sometimes I mention the people, you know, the young, they don't know who they are, which is, you know, it's heartbreaking for me when they say that. You know, the worst was, you know, I did Connie Francis recently. Come on. Nobody knew who Connie Francis was. How big was she, right, back in the 50s?
Right,
she
was
huge, man. You know?
Early 50s.
Yeah, but she all the hits, she's one of the most popular singing stars in history, you know? How many hits?
But, so let me guess, she now has a theater in Brandon, Missouri, right?
No, she does. She lives in Lauderdale. You know, and she's just kind of chilling. She likes to go out and eat, and, you know.
Uh-huh.
She's got a bunch of friends that she hangs out with.
Right.
She's just chilling, yeah.
Well, it's amazing. These kids that are watching Seinfeld for the first time, I envy them being able to see these episodes for the very first time.
Right.
You know? I mean, now, like, you know, you're surfing on this, and say, oh, it's a puppy shirt. No, you know, you're... You never really could surf to a Seinfeld episode that you've never seen. Right?
Exactly. I don't think there's one show out there that you can remember every scene. You know, maybe I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke, you know, things like that. But,
right.
you know, I mean, in a more modern era, I think it's definitely Seinfeld.
Yeah, you know, doubt about it.
Also, you're doing you're ordained now, right?
Yes, I became a minister.
Right.
It's very difficult to do. You just had to get online and know how to spell your name. But for $35, I
really?
Actually marry people, and I give them a warranty with the marriage. And if it doesn't work out after 5 years, you know, they get a second marriage for free.
That's funny. That's funny.
It's a lot of fun, but naturally, you can imagine the people that want to be married by the real Kramer have a quite interesting life, so to say.
I like to get remarried by you, me and my wife.
You know, I've done a lot of redoing vows and all that stuff.
Yeah.
People have written some very funny vows that, I incorporate into the ceremony.
So how does one do that?
Many of them, because most of the time, you know, from the Midwest, that for me to go out there, I'd have to charge a big fee. And,
right.
You know, I tell them, it's not worth it. You want to get married on Skype? I'll do that with you.
So how do you perform most of the marriages?
In my theater.
Oh, okay. So you would have to go to New York?
Yeah, if you want to get married, like, in person with me, or else you have to, like, you know, go for some bucks, you know, and get a nice fee for my personal appearance, and then a flight to the hotel. But if they happen to be in New York, I've done a lot of renewal of vows on the tour, you know.
Before
we go out to buy merchandise, I'll do about a 10-minute chunk and have these people who are obviously in love with Seinfeld as much as each other. And it's fun. It's just fun.
You can make a honeymoon out of it, actually. You go to New York, get remarried.
I've had that. People come to New York specifically for me to marry them and have their reception, have their friends come. You know, they book the whole bus. I've had a lot of private tours where people book the whole bus, like, you know, some guy's waiting online to get into a theater and all of a sudden this bus pulls up.
Right.
Says, hey, Jeff, come here. You are Jeff, right? And they get on a bus and they have all their friends yelling, happy birthday, surprise! That's really a lot of fun to do that.
Very cool.
I had one incident that was really kind of a disaster. I had done a tour for this woman who was a destination manager who was bringing a group through. And I also do this lecture, Welcome to New York, where I give tips on how to thrive and survive in the city, you know. And so she said, you know, it's my husband's birthday. It's his 60th birthday. And this was like in the summertime, and it was like for October or something. And she says, I'd like to do a surprise for him. So I said, sure. So we worked on it. We planned it and did the invitations and everything. And the scam I had set up was that she told her husband that before we go out for dinner, I have to stop. One of my client's sons is in a play in a Norfolk Broadway theater, and I promised I would go there. It's only going to be about 45 minutes. So in the meantime, I had these actors I hired to be on the steps leading into the theater, and they were all saying, oh, I saw it last night. What a worst piece of crap. I can't believe I got to see it again. But you know, my sister's in it, and they were all complaining about how terrible this play they're about to see is. And they're on the line listening to this, and this guy's thinking, oh, my God, what have I done to myself? I have to be. And then, of course, the theater is now open, and when he walks in and everybody's in their seats, he's yelling, surprise! Now, you would think that would be a great setup for a good party, right?
Right.
This guy is an inveterate Yankee fan.
Uh-huh.
Who knew when we were planning this in the summer that the night of this party would be Game 6 of a World Series?
Oh, gosh.
And this guy couldn't handle it. He wanted no part of being in any party with his friends. He had a little Sony television set with him.
Right.
And he just was going to be a prick the whole night.
Oh,
you know, mumbling and hating and watching the game.
That's a shame.
So it was really kind of turned out to be quite a bust. But it was a great idea. I loved the idea of having these kids on the staircase talking about how terrible this play you have to see is. That just kind of backfired. But anyway, it's a lot of fun, even when you get like a wet turkey like that.
Right.
Still fun.
You did recently Miracle on 42nd Street. What was that all about?
The building I live in is very special.
Right.
It's called Manhattan Plaza. It's federally subsidized housing for performing artists. 70% of the residents in the building are singers, dancers, musicians, entertainers. Not agents or playwrights, but actual performers.
Right.
It was kind of a fluke because the neighborhood called Hell's Kitchen was really like a red light district.
Right.
And the plan was to create this luxury housing as an anchor to revitalize the whole theater district. And while they're building this thing, which the apartment has a health club with swimming pools, tennis courts, racquetball, climbing. I live like in a country club 2 blocks from
Wow.
And the best part about it, it's federally subsidized, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So rent, like when Larry moved in first, you know, he came in as I did as a comedian. His rent was like $67 a month.
Holy crap.
If it wasn't for being able to live in Manhattan Plaza for $67 a month, he could not have, like, you know, been hanging out in comedy clubs until 2, 3 in the morning.
Right.
And have to get up and have a job in the morning. So, a lot of Alicia Keys grew up in the building. Terrence Howard grew up in the building.
Right.
Samuel L. Jackson was a security guard.
How about that?
In the building. And so, anyway, it was just a blessing because when I moved to New York, you know, I had a 2-bedroom apartment with my daughter. And I've just been really blessed to be here since 1977. I mean, no matter where I am in the world, I'm never ever giving up this home. You know, it's right on the corner of 10th Avenue and 43rd Street. It has a beautiful view of the river. And here we live. And the building still maintains the demographic: 70% performing artists, 10% senior citizens, 10% community residents, people displaced when they tore down the tenements to build this place, and then 10% what they call fair market, which is the category I'm in now. I've been for years now. I pay the full rent, but it's just terrific. I can't say enough about it, but it was turned into a documentary that it's been playing on PBS stations called The Miracle on 42nd Street.
Right.
And it's really interesting, the interviews of all these big shot celebrities now who started out and owe their thanks to Manhattan Plaza for providing them safe, affordable housing while they pursued a career in the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I saw a special too. I think it was Woody Allen. He went back to his old neighborhood. And he was showing the, you know, where he grew up, the school, and you know, I find that stuff interesting.
Oh, no, you're talking about Back to the Bronx. That was That was, what's his name, Jerry's manager.
Okay.
Irving Azar.
Huh.
That was really cool. That's where so-and-so, my girlfriend, used to live up in that apartment. Yeah.
Very cool.
But it's really interesting, really. Very warm, touching, special.
You know, you sound like one of my family members, because my father's family's all from Bensonhurst.
Oh, okay.
My dad's from...
You know, you can't mistake my accent for a
no.
Texan, huh?
My dad's from Brooklyn. He grew up in Brooklyn. I had an uncle that had a... He was a big shot electronics, retail electronics on... he was on Times Square, you know.
Crazy Eddie.
No, well, we're related to Antar. We are related to him. Distant cousins.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I got a couple of books I want to send you. If you can, just email me where I can send them to you.
Sure.
One of them is called Check the G's. It's about me growing up in the family business. You know all those retail electronics stores?
Used to bait and switch.
That's what I did for years. And the story's all about that. It's pretty funny. And then I just came out with a book that's just released called The Rockstar Chronicles. I interviewed, there's about 45 guys in there, legends, that recent conversations with. I think you'll like it.
Oh, great. Well, we're off the air. I'll give you my address. I'd love to read those.
I think you'll enjoy it.
So you were like a bait and switch guy?
I was a bait and switch guy.
Okay, I was a magazine salesman in my teenage years.
Is that right? Door to door or what?
Door to door. I used to con people to buy $300 worth of magazines if it's just going to fill up their mailbox.
I remember that.
I had a great pitch, and I was very charming, and you know, I was going to school, and this was helping with my tuition. So not only will you be getting great literature to read and current events, but you'd also be helping somebody to get an education.
Right. our stores were in D.C. We were on F Street in D.C. We're a couple blocks from the White House. We were there for over 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's funny because we talked in Pig Latin in front of the customers. They didn't know what the hell we were talking about. You would enjoy it. You know, New Yorkers would definitely.
You know, I did a cruise with the son of Waxy Maxy.
Waxy Maxy. Remember them?
Yeah. They sold that place at the right time. People were bidding all kinds of money to get the right size.
Right.
Before, you know, the technology precluded brick and mortar stores. But yeah, that was like an institution in Washington, wasn't it?
Waxy Maxy, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Kenny here.
So what? Your era was like the Sony Walkman?
Yeah, I mean, we started back in the early 60s. My dad started in Baltimore with, you know, reel-to-reels, transistor radios, you know, all from that, from the very beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then we got into the Walkmans and, you know, the 35-millimeter cameras, everything you can think of, you know.
Yeah, I had one of those first Sony video, reel-to-reel video machines.
Yeah, yeah.
And the camera was separate. It plugged into this
yep.
player that you had to schlep along with you. But that was that started it all.
That's right. Oh, it was fantastic. I was blown away when it first came out.
Yeah.
I sold a Walkman to President Clinton when he was a governor in Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
And I threw out a famous person. I don't mention her in the book, but it was Cicely Tyson.
Oh, okay.
I got a
little too much attitude for you.
Oh my God, horrible. Yeah, she came in looking for a light meter, and we didn't have light meters, so I referred her to another store, and she wouldn't take no for an answer.
Well,
yeah, I think she was drunk.
Probably.
A lot of great stories. Kenny, here's your final question for you.
Okay.
Has
our time flown so fast with this?
It's pretty fast, isn't it?
How much time have we done?
We got about 10 minutes, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
We got 10 minutes left, we've been talking for 10 minutes?
No, we got 10 minutes left.
Oh, okay. I have short-term memory issues. We could start again. I wouldn't remember what the hell I said to you.
It's funny. Kenny, this is a question I ask all the rock stars.
Okay.
And now I get some interesting answers. I'm going to ask you that question. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie,
uh-huh.
to either perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that opens the door to, like, so many millions of opportunities. Like, collaborate, I'd like to do a movie with them.
A movie, you want to stand up, anything. Music, you know, perform with a rock, famous band, anything.
I guess I'd like to be with Larry.
With Larry, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the crew, he's got
right.
everything going for him.
Right.
If I just come up with a premise, I know he could turn it into something quite magnificent.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you and Larry would work out perfect, you know?
Well, you know, we have such a great relationship. For 6 years, we lived across the hall from each other. It was
yeah.
like we were roommates, and we always got along. We never had one moment when there was any tension.
Right. You guys still talk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to talk to him Sunday night after I see the first episode.
Okay. Well, tell him I said hello. I know he went to University of Maryland. I'm originally from Maryland.
The history major.
Yeah. My brother went there, too.
Really?
Maryland.
Where are you based now?
Me? I'm in Sarasota.
Ah, right. On the coast.
You're right. But I used to live in Fort Lauderdale. I went to school there for broadcasting.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a lot. You were probably in Fort Lauderdale around when I was there. You remember a club called Bachelor's 3?
Yeah, I sure do.
I used to play there all the time. I opened for Lou Rawls, Frankie Valli, and Bobby Goldwater, and a whole myriad. This guy owned the store. He owned that joint. It was actually Joe Namath, Ray Abruzzi, and another couple of partners that shall remain nameless. The boys,
right?
But they used to use me like about every 2 months I would come to open an act of Temptations, the Stylistics.
Fantastic.
Fort Lauderdale was great to me.
Yeah. You remember the Newport, Miami?
Yeah, of course.
Which is still there.
I'll tell you an inside story. My girlfriend, when I lived down there, was the head of publicity for TK Productions.
Right.
Which was a black label. And there were these two stock boys, Rick Casey and Rick Finch and Harry Casey. And they were stock boys. And it was a black label, and they would, like, package and ship stuff at night. And Stone, the owner of the place, let them use the studio at night.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with this, let's get down tonight. And, you know, anyway, P.S., they became Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Right.
And they were huge. And Janet, my girlfriend, was like the head of publicity when this act broke. And nobody knew that they were white guys. They thought it was a black act because it came from a black label. So it was something they were keeping quiet because it crossed over at the, you know, the popular charts besides It broke first on the black radio, but then, so it was like this huge hit. And there was no Sunshine Band. So they went to the Newport Hotel, Miami Beach, mm-hmm. and they hired the house band to be the Sunshine Band. And then they took off, and Janet coined the phrase, the Miami Sound.
The Miami Sound, yeah.
Yeah, and that was quite an era.
Right.
But, yeah, all those clubs I used to work down there. You know, when I started, I was going to tell you the story, but about how, you know, the demographic really switched on me. And when once I started becoming a rock comedian,
right.
it opened a lot of doors. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of comedians started out that way as rock comedians, you know?
Yeah. Well, when I started doing stand-up in 1971,
yeah.
I mean, maybe there was like 100 comics, like younger guys doing stuff, you know? There were only 4 comedy clubs in the entire United States in 1973. There were 3 in New York, Comic Strip, The Catch a Rising Star and The Improv, and there was 1 in L.A., The Comedy Store.
Right.
10 years later, there are now 350 comedy clubs in America.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an explosion, you know, and so many guys said, oh, shit, I could be funny for a half an hour, you know. Next thing you know, there was this glut of comedians.
Yeah.
But the comedy clubs were opening so fast that it was absorbing them, but that reached the point, you know, where it was just too many, too many guys and not enough places.
I remember, like, Robert Klein was on the rock circuit. Freddie Prinze, I think, did some of that as well. A lot of those guys did the rock circuit.
Yeah. The colleges also was very big.
Right. Well, if you ever get the urge to do some stand-up, I got a perfect club for you here in Sarasota. It's called McCurdy's.
A comedy club?
Yeah, and a lot of the big acts come here just to, you know, before they go on tour.
Uh-huh.
And they play for cheap here because, you know, I mean, I've seen, you know, Jackie Mason and Arsenio was just here. It's a great club.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't generally like to play comedy clubs.
Yep.
You get these calls, scam likely.
Right. Yeah.
Let's see. Hey, scammer, what do you want?
This is a call from Amazon to inform you that your Amazon Prime account will be auto-renewed for $39.99.
Oh,
that's okay, great.
Electronic voice.
You're auto-renewing for $39. It was $100. What a day. I just saved $70.
It's amazing what they get away with nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, these robocalls, you know, I'm getting a lot of them in Chinese.
You're kidding me. Really?
Yeah, no, it's going on now for a couple of months, like 2 or 3 a day.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Because I take the calls and say scam like because 1 out of 10 of them is actually somebody trying to reach me because I have all my phones,
right.
You know, call forwarded to me.
Right.
So I can't afford, I could afford, but I answer them. I give them like, 10 seconds of my time.
Right, right.
Find out if they're legit. But the ones that are in Chinese, I mean, God, imagine how many numbers they have to call to connect with somebody.
Unbelievable. The Chinese do a lot of hacking too. I got a note from what is that, the security, national security, I forgot what you call it. But anyway, they told me I was hacked by the Chinese at one time. Yeah. So
yeah, you get these that I've been watching your account and I have control of it now.
Right.
Blah blah blah. There are people that have ransomware. That is true. But these people have been calling me a full of crap. You know.
Yeah.
They don't have any control of anything.
They even call police stations. That's how smart they are.
Another one of these ones that are police organizations that are looking for contributions.
Exactly. Exactly. That's another one. Yeah. Kenny, what's next for you? What's your future endeavors look like? What are you going to do next?
I'm taking off this Saturday of my last tour to April.
Right.
And I'm going to go maybe spend a month in Boca.
Oh, good.
I might go to have a lot of friends who now live in Cabo. My partner and I lived in Mexico for about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Just 4 months a year.
Right.
Had a place down there. She's an only child and her mother has dementia and it's curtailed our traveling and she has to keep taking care of her.
Yeah.
But and she also had a great career working for Crystal Cruises.
Oh, awesome.
As a guest entertainer and all the privileges of a guest on the 6-star cruise line, and one of the privileges was plus One, me, Mr. Plus One.
Yeah.
And so we traveled for 10 years. We had a Hirschman ideal life. We'd do 4 months on the ship.
Right.
4 months in Cabo and 4 months in New York. You know, always in nice weather.
Awesome, awesome.
And So that sort of drifted away from us for the time being.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think I'm going to go down to Cabo and visit some friends for 2 or 3 weeks and just take it easy, you know. If any of you listeners want to book the tour, come on. It starts again in April.
Okay.
I mean, the easiest thing to do at this point is to just go to TripAdvisor.
Okay.
And put in the Kramer, Kenny Kramer, or Kramer Tour, or
right.
Kramer Reality.
Definitely.
And it comes right up. And TripAdvisor has been great because you can make your reservation and you can cancel it up to 24 hours. And they're very efficient. They're really good. And, you know, people, they get a confirmation immediately. And so that would be the easiest thing to do. Or you can go to KennyKramer.com.
Right.
Or, if you're interested in my stage show, you just go to KramerOnSeinfeld.com.
Okay.
And there's a lot of video clips and jokes from the show and so on and so forth. But it's really a lot of fun. You know, I honestly, goodness, I enjoy doing it. Because, as I say, it's not like I have a job. I get to hang out with Seinfeld fans, which is the greatest demographic in the history of television.
It is. Yeah.
Highest educated, most disposable income, most... basically smart, rich people with a sense of humor. That's my kind of people.
Yeah.
I like smart, rich people with a sense of humor. If I were in Jerry Head created a show like Home Improvement, I'd be doing my shows at trailer parks, and I just wouldn't have the same panache.
You know, me and Jerry have something common. He's actually a Syrian Jew, and so am I.
Really?
Yeah. S-Wise is what we call them. That's what the book is all about. The S-Y stores, they were all over New York, you know, and we all operated the same. The stores always looked the same. You know, we weren't related, but everything looked the same. We had the same procedures. Everybody talked Pig Latin, you know. Pretty funny.
Yeah. Part of my lecture, Welcome to New York, is warning people about, be careful, they may give you a great price, but you're buying POW.
Yep. Yeah. That's right. That remember they used to start out with the body of a 35mm camera, and then after you get out of it was like $1,000, you know?
Right.
It'd be a wholesale, below wholesale price, just for the body of the camera.
I know, it's something.
I know all the tricks.
Uh-huh. Well, it's still happening here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I guess B&H is the only place that,
right.
that you should really go for that stuff.
Yeah, things have changed. No more Wiz.
Well, Best Buy seems to have taken a bunch of that market. They're still out there.
Right. Yeah, they're still out there.
But it's a good business. And, you know, Best Buy I found to be pretty reliable. But, of course, yep. To me, Amazon is really the way to go.
Yeah.
Where I'll pay 10-15% more for the same product from Amazon, but I know if something's wrong, they're going to fix it in a heartbeat, you know?
Exactly.
They, you know, their customer service has created a culture that,
yep.
you don't have to argue with it. You know, if you send me this thing, okay, no problem. We'll refund you. We'll give you back. We'll get you another one. We'll have it for you tomorrow.
Yep.
They're really great.
They're the only ones left. I mean, Circuit City, all those guys are gone, you know?
Yeah. CompUSA.
CompUSA. Yeah.
Okay, it's an evolving world. The thing is, we have to evolve with it.
Exactly.
That's the most important thing.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it passes you by, and there you are alone on a park bench.
You're right. Kenny, I want to thank you for being on the show. I'm going to promote the hell out of you here.
Okay.
I've got like 6 websites. YouTube, iTunes, I mean, it's gonna be everywhere, man. You deserve it, you know, you're a good guy.
Oh, thank you. You sound pretty cool yourself.
Say hello.
Go up here. I'm gonna give you an address. I'd like to meet
you. Please, I want to send you the books, you know, recheck the G's. Maybe Larry will give it a, you know, an idea for a show. It'll be a funny show.
Uh-huh.
And you could be one of the guys in the show.
There we go.
You could play my father. How's that?
Okay, sounds good. How old are you?
Me, I'll be 61 this month.
That's a little bit of a stretch, but I could be your father.
Actually, my father, I take care of him. He's 90. He's going to be 95.
Oh, God bless him.
He's a Marine Corps vet. He was in Okinawa, Saipan. You know, you don't see too many of those guys anymore.
Must have some stories to tell.
Oh, great stories. But he was born in Brooklyn, in Bensonhurst.
What kind of shape is he in?
He's in good shape. He's got a walker, but that's about it.
But he's ambulatory and he's alert.
He's got his mind. Yeah, he's got his mind. Yep.
That's great. See, Marcy, her mother, she's Brazilian.
Right.
She's got this Brazilian Indian blood that might make her last till 110.
Yeah, exactly.
But you talk to her, she's totally cognizant. You think, well, she's a really nice lady, but then she starts telling you about the time she had lunch with the Queen of England. You start suspecting, oh, maybe there's something here.
Maybe she really did.
Yeah. Maybe she did, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the story goes that the Queen's Club broke down. While she was waiting for somebody to help her, there was a restaurant nearby.
Yeah.
And she happened to be strolling, and the Queen invited her to join her.
Uh-huh.
It's the same story she tells everyone.
Is that right?
I just guess at this point she really believes it.
But you know what? Everything you hear, you can associate with a Seinfeld episode. You remember the one with the Gorder? The late with
yeah,
Gandhi.
She, saw that the other night.
She knew Gandhi, you know, you find out later on.
Yeah, right.
It's so funny. You can identify everything in life with a Seinfeld episode.
I know, it's amazing how you know, in the height of its popularity when it was like the, what they call the water cooler show, like
yeah.
Everybody in the morning would be by the water cooler talking about the episode that night.
Right.
It was amazing how people related and identified to all of this stuff and how it created a whole new lexicon in the English language, you know, with concepts like double dipping and re-gifting and sponge-worthy and, you know, it's just the vocabulary that it created is amazing.
It's amazing. It really is.
Communicate with each other with just two words, you know, like some chick is looking at this guy and going, sponge-worthy.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
I want it.
All right, so this thing is going to go on the air when?
It'll be Tuesday.
Okay, look forward to it.
And I want to thank you for inspiring Larry David and bringing us.
Okay.
Because if it wasn't for you, we probably wouldn't have Seinfeld.
Well, you might have Seinfeld, but you wouldn't have Kramer.
You wouldn't have Kramer, and that it wouldn't work that way.
You need to have that Kramer character. That's
exactly. Kenny, thank you so much, man, for being on the show. And send me your address so I can send you some books.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Where do I send it to?
You know the same email that I've been contacting you?
I probably could find it. I'll look for it.
You want me to give you my email address?
It's a short one.
You know, author, A-U-T-H-O-R.
Hold it.
Okay.
A-U-T-H-O-R.
A-U-T-H-O-R. Shasho, that's my last name, S-H-A-S-H-O, at gmail.com.
S-H-A-S-H-O. H-O.
At gmail.com.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right, Kenny.
Great week. Talk to you soon.
You too. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
For more information about Kenny Kramer, visit www.kennykramer.com or www.kennykramer.com/reality tour text text.html Kramer's Reality Tour. But you can find probably just about anything on www.kennykramer.com. Very special thanks to the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And finally, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rock Star Chronicles, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us Free, Series 1, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. And real quick, I just want to let you know who's in the book. Chris Squire, Dr. John, Greg Lake, Henry McCullough, Jack Bruce, Joe Lalla, Johnny Winter, Keith Emerson, Paul Kattner, Ray Thomas, Ronnie Montrose, Tony Joe White, David Clayton Thomas, Mike Love, Tommy Rowe, Barry Hay, Chris Thompson, Jesse Colin Young, John Kay, Julian Lennon, Mark Lindsay, Mickey Dolenz, Peter Rivera, Tommy James, Todd Rundgren, Dave Mason, Edgar Winter, Frank Marino, Greg Rowley, Ian Anderson, Jim Danny Mangrum, John Anderson, Lou Graham, Mick Box, Randy Bachman, Robin Trower, Roger Fisher, Steve Hackett, Annie Haslam, Melanie Safka, Petula Clark, Susie Quattro, Colin Blundstone, Dave Davies, Jim McCarty, and Pete Best. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at Amazon.com. Also, my other book, purchase a copy of the other one entitled Check the G's. It's the true story of a neglected American family and their wacky family business. Also available at Amazon.com. I promise you'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.